Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Iti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Panchaka Vatruvyascha Kripa Sindhuvyeva Cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo E Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priya Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gauramaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottama Devim Sarasatim Vyasam Tato Jayamudiraye Nashta prayesha vabhadreshu Nityam bhagavata sevaya Bhagavati uttama shloke Bhakti bhavati naishtiki We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 15, The Pandavas Retire Timely. Beginning with verse 40 and possibly going to the end of the chapter. I understand there was quite some discussion at the end of the last lecture of Yadananda Swami. Anyone remember what the topic was? That was last week. Huh? No? You can have all the time you want. Something about Krishna leaving?
Yes, Krishna disappearing and Arjuna coming back from Dwarka and explaining to Yudhisthira.
Right.
So,
when
he was feeling so these things,
yeah.
He was asking many questions.
I also raised that question, didn't I? That was me.
He also.
Then it must have been an important question. a good question. Okay. Verse 40. Let's chant together. Visrija tatra tatsarvam. Visrija tatra tatsarvam. Dukula valayadikam Dukula valayadikam Nirmamo Nirahankara.
Nirmamo
Nirahankara.
Sanchinna Shesha Vandana.
Sanchinna Shesha Vandana. What's all that mean? Visrija. Relinquishing.
Relinquishing.
You all know what that means? No. That's good. Huh? Yeah. To give up.
Tatra.
All those. Tat.
That.
Sarvam.
Everything.
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 Dukula.
Belt.
Valayadikam.
And bangles.
Nirmama.
Uninterested.
Nirahankara.
Unattached.
Sanchinna.
Perfectly cut off.
Ashesha Bandana.
Unlimited attachment.
Translation and purport by Sivan Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada.
Translation: Maharaj Yudhishthir at once relinquished all his garments, belt, and ornaments of the royal order, and became completely disinterested and unattached to everything. Purport: to become purified of material contamination is the necessary qualification for becoming one of the associates of the Lord. No one can become an associate of the Lord or can go back to Godhead without such purification. Maharaj Yudhishthir, therefore, to become spiritually pure, at once gave up his royal opulence by dress and ornaments. What's going on this morning? Cameras everywhere. Because he suddenly dashed in. Photo and ran out again. Okay. The kashaya, or saffron loincloth, of a sannyasi indicates freedom from all attractive material garments, and thus he changed his dress accordingly. He became disinterested in his kingdom and family, and thus became free from all material contamination or material designation. People are generally attached to various kinds of designations, namely the designations of family, society, country, occupation, wealth, position, and many others. As long as one is attached to such designations, he is considered materially impure. The so-called leaders of men in the modern age are attached by national consciousness. But they do not know that such false consciousness is also another designation of the materially conditioned soul. And one has to relinquish such designations before one can become eligible to go back to Godhead. Foolish people, however, adore such men who die in national consciousness. But here is an example of Maharaj Yudhishthira, a royal king who prepared himself to leave this world without such national consciousness. And yet, he is remembered even today because he was a great pious king, almost on the same level with the personality of Godhead, Sri Rama. And because people of the world were dominated by such pious kings, they were happy in all respects. And it was quite possible for such great emperors to rule the world. All right, I'm going to move on. So many themes are here. The general theme is the departure of the Pandavas one after another. And I would suggest that this is, as the first canto Bhagavatam in general, is a kind of commentary on the Mahabharata. So this is a commentary on the Maha Prasthanika Parvan, one of the 18 Parvans. It's the shortest in the Mahabharata. It's only 120 verses long, describing the Pandavas heading north and leaving their bodies. So we get quite a different version here. And we might say it's the esoteric version as opposed to the exoteric version of Mahabharata. Verse 30, 41. So we're hearing about Yudhishthira now, how he is leaving. Then he amalgamated all the sense organs into the mind, then the mind into life, life into breathing, his total existence into the embodiments of the five elements, and his body into death. Then, as pure self, he became free from the material conception of life. This is one of a few descriptions in the Bhagavatam of what may be called yogic death or yogic destruction. In the 12th canto, there is mention of four kinds of pralaya. And one of them is yogic pralaya, the process by which the yogi destroys his or her connection to the world. And it's these descriptions seem to follow a general pattern of inversion of the creation as understood in the Sankhya system. So if we go to the third canto, we read about how the world evolves, it unfolds, something like a flower, starting with ahamkara, and then we get so many evolutes coming out from this essential element, ahamkara. But what's happening here is the inverse of that. So we're getting a Instead of an evolution, we're getting a devolution, a devolution. And it's interesting that it's not a yogi who's doing this, but rather it's a king. A king who spends his life doing the things that kings do, you would not expect to then, from one day to the next, be able to do what's being described here. But then again, what king are we talking about? We're talking about none other than Yudhishthira. And who is Yudhishthira, after all? Who is Yudhishthira? He is understood to be a form of Dharma itself. Okay, next verse. Tritve hutva chapanchatvam tachaikatve ajuhon muni sarvam atmani ajuhavid brahmanyatmanam avyaye. Thus, annihilating the gross body of five elements into the three qualitative modes of material nature, he merged them in one nescience and then absorbed that nescience in the self, Brahman, which is inexhaustible in all circumstances. Sounds cool, huh? Let's try that. Okay, there's a bit of the, I won't read the whole commentary purport here. There's a bit which I've noticed. It's a theme which Srila Prabhupada brings out more than once in this section, and that is the notion of jivan mukta. So Prabhupada says in this purport, this stage is called the jivan mukta stage, or the liberated stage, even in the material world. That is the process of ending material existence. One must not only think that he is Brahman, but must act like Brahman. One who only thinks himself Brahman is an impersonalist. So that's an interesting definition of impersonalism. I think I'm Brahman. Ah. Caught you. You're an impersonalist. One who acts like Brahman is the pure devotee. Well, this this term, jivan mukta, is a sort of technical term, living liberation, it's sometimes translated. And it's a bit controversial. Within Vedanta, different traditions claim, some claim it is possible for it to happen, and others say, no, it's not possible. So you may be interested to know, I hope I got this right, it's been some time since I looked at this, but Shankaracharya, as I remember, he argues that yes, jivan mukta mukti is possible, that it is possible to attain liberation in this life. Now, you may be surprised to hear that Ramanujacharya says, no, not possible. Liberation is only possible after death. Why? Because you still have a body, the body still has limitations. It is itself the evidence of previous karma. So like that, he argues. Liberation in this life, no. He's a Vaishnava, and he's saying, not possible. Our acharyas, Gaudiya Vaishnava, follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they say, yes, it is possible. And why is it possible? That's kind of hinted, suggested by this passage in Prabhupada's purport, because the Vaishnava understands to act in Brahman, or as Brahman, that is liberation, and that you can do according to our acharyas, in this life. We might say it's very much the a cornerstone of our philosophy of the practice of Krishna consciousness, that you can be liberated simply by engaging in devotional service. Okay, let's move on. Now, this surprised me a little bit, but this is how it goes. We read about how Yudhishthira has done all this yogic practice of devolution, and you expect at this point to read, and then Yudhishthira, you know, went back home, back to Godhead, or something like that. But no, the next verse says, after that, after he's done all of this yogic devolution, after that, Maharaj Yudhishthira dressed himself in torn clothing, gave up eating all solid foods, voluntarily became dumb, and let his hair hang loose. So you can let it all hang out, as they say, let it all hang loose when you follow Yudhishthira's example. All this combined to make him look like an urchin. You know what an urchin is? Urchin is like a child who has no home, lives on the streets, has long hair, and lives ragged existence. All this combined to make him look like an urchin or madman with no occupation. He did not depend on his brothers for anything, and just like a deaf man, he heard nothing. This might remind us of the description in Canto 5 of Rishabhdeva. After Rishabhdeva renounces his kingdom, what does he do? He goes to the forest, he lives like an urchin or a madman, and people abuse him and make fun of him and so on. He is radically renounced, and obviously he has left society. This canto is interesting in so many ways, how there are descriptions of departures, the central one being Krishna's departure. Now we're getting the Pandava's departure. Before this, there was the departure of Ashvataman, but in his case, it was a forced departure of outcasting. His hair was cut off, the hair jewel, whatever. In effect, he was outcasted, which is a kind of death. In this case, Yudhishthira is voluntarily outcasting himself by becoming a renunciant. That's in effect what sannyas is, except there's a curious thing about sannyas, in at least in later culture, but I think also here, the sannyasi, by leaving society, becomes the center of society, becomes the most honored person in society. In a way, you could say Yudhishthira is going beyond that, because he is not attending to his dress. He's letting his hair grow. He's looking acting like a madman. He then started toward the north, treading the path which was accepted by his forefathers and great men, to devote himself completely to the thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he lived in that way wherever he went. Param Dhyayan, in the verse it says, what is he doing? He is meditating. So he has left behind everything physically, and more than that, he has done this sort of yoga devolution, so he's completely detached from the body, and in that condition he is able to meditate. Again, keep in mind, he is a king. But now he's given all of this up. And as the Bhagavatam first canto is a commentary on the Mahabharata, Shirana Gopinath Ki Jai, in which the various key persons of the Mahabharata are celebrated as being actually great devotees, as Bhagavatas or as Mahabhagavatas. So now we get this with Pandavas, Yudhishthira first, and then it will describe the others. Whereas, as I said in the Mahaprasthanika Parvan, it's describing how they all head north, and then one after another they drop off. As I remember, it's Draupadi who drops first. And the understanding is she drops dead. So she drops dead, and then one after another, Nakula, Sahadeva, Arjuna, Bhima, and then Yudhishthira is left. And Yudhishthira has... He's been accompanied by a dog. This is not mentioned in the Bhagavatam. He's accompanied by a dog, and everyone else is gone, and now he's being invited, I believe in a sort of heavenly airplane, to come back to heaven. And to heaven, not to Goloka. And he says, okay, I'm happy to go with my dog. And the response is, no, we don't have dogs there. You cannot bring your dog. And he says, well, then I'm not going. I'm not leaving. This dog has been my friend, has been faithful to me all this time. I'm not leaving this dog. And they say, but come on. Here's your chance. Finally, you know, all the austerities you've done in life have been to qualify yourself to come to heaven. Now you can come to heaven. Just forget about the dog. You've left everything else. Certainly you can be detached from this dog. And he said it's not about attachment, detachment. It's that this dog has been such a friend. I cannot abandon someone who has taken shelter of me. And so at that point, the dog reveals itself to be none other than the personality of Dharma. And he has recognized Yudhishthira. Of course, it was a test in which Yudhishthira has proven himself to be indeed the personality of Dharma himself, because he has followed this higher Dharma, which is to give shelter to devoted souls. Well, all of that disappears in this description, in the Bhagavatam, in order to emphasize something else. What is that? That these Pandavas are all Bhagavatas, and as Bhagavatas or Mahabhagavatas, what do? They focus all their attention on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Verse 45. The younger brothers of Maharaj Yudhishthira observed that the age of Kali had already arrived throughout the world, and that the citizens of the kingdom were already affected by irreligious practice. Therefore, they decided to follow in the footsteps of their elder brother. So, the general pattern is followed of the Mahabharata, but here the context is given of the age of Kali. They recognize it's said the moment Krishna disappeared, that's when the age of Kali begins. And the Bhagavatam is focusing, especially in the first canto and then in the twelfth canto, on this temporal context of Kali. There is a problem. The problem is we are in a very disturbed age. What do we do? We hear the Bhagavatam, but the conclusion of the Pandavas is this is no place for us. Our place is in the Dvapara Yuga. And so they have to leave. In the purport, Prabhupada writes, according to the principles of Sanatana Dharma, one must retire from family life after half the duration of life is finished and must engage himself in self-realization. But the question of engaging oneself is not always decided, meaning how to engage oneself after giving up material life. Sometimes retired men are bewildered about how to engage themselves for the last days of life. Here is a decision by authorities like the Pandavas. All of them engage themselves in favorably culturing the devotional service of the Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, one might think, well, wait a minute. I thought they're all just kind of leaving to give up their bodies. And Prabhupada is kind of turning it, he's putting a different emphasis here. He's saying, no, the engagement, it's positive engagement, it's service to the Lord. In the Jain tradition, there is a practice which is occasionally followed to the present day, a form of ritual suicide. With the approval of one's religious authorities, one's guru or gurus, they're called munis and so on, one can observe what's called salekana. And this is a process of gradually reducing one's eating and drinking down to nothing. It's an extremely public process. It's so public that, I don't know if it's still there, but you can find, you used to be able to find on YouTube some video of a Jain monk giving up his body, including the actual moment of death. I used to show this to students to wake them up. It's very effective. they have the Muni is actually in a sitting position as he leaves the body. Anyway, that's a form of what I guess anthropologists would call religious ritual death. So what we read of regarding the Pandavas is also a kind of ritual death. They are intentionally leaving in order to leave the world. But, as I said, Prabhupada gives this sort of different emphasis for the practical engagement, because if one is at halfway mark of one's life, he's referring to the idea that when you're 50 years old, then you take vanaprastha. So that means there's another 50 years. What do I do during that time? Verse 46. They all had performed all the principles of religion and as a result rightly decided that the lotus feet of the Lord, Sri Krishna, are the supreme goal of all. Therefore, they meditated upon his feet without interruption. So, lots of emphasis on this. Bhishma was meditating on the Lord as he left his body. Actually, he was meditating on the whole form of the Lord. Lord Krishna was personally present. And then verses 47, 48. Thus, by pure consciousness, due to constant devotional remembrance, they attained the spiritual sky, which is ruled over by the Supreme Narayana, Lord Krishna. This is attained only by those who meditate upon the one Supreme Lord without deviation. This abode of the Lord, Sri Krishna, known as Goloka Vrindavan, cannot be attained by persons who are absorbed in the material conception of life, but the Pandavas, being completely washed of all material contamination, attained that abode in their very same bodies. So this same idea, Jivan Mukta, comes again. And in the purport, Prabhupada writes, the Bhagavad Gita 14:26 also affirms, The Bhagavad Gita 14:26 also affirms the statement of Srila Jiva Goswami when the Lord says that anyone who executes devotional service systematically without deviation can attain the perfection of Brahman by surpassing the contamination of the three modes of material nature, and when the Brahman perfection is still more advanced by the self-same execution of devotional service, there is no doubt at all that one can attain the supreme spiritual planet, Goloka Vrindavan, without change of body, as we have already discussed in connection with the Lord's returning to his abode without a change of body. So Prabhupada connects this departure of the Pandavas with the departure of Krishna as taking place without a change of body. This is a quite radical idea. 14:9, Vidura. Well, now Pandavas have left. What about Vidura? Vidura, while on pilgrimage, left his body at Prabhasa. Because he was absorbed in thought of Lord Krishna, he was received by the denizens of the Pitriloka planet, where he returned to his original post. The expression being absorbed in that thought, Krishna Avesha. Krishna Aveshena. I just thought it's interesting that this expression is used because Avesha means intensely entering, but it can also mean possession. So one could take it as being possessed by Krishna. And we have in the Chaitanya Charitamrita the idea of prema-avesha. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is absorbed in prema, or he is possessed by prema. And then finally, verse 50. Draupadi also saw that her husbands, without caring for her, were leaving home. She knew well about Lord Vasudeva Krishna, the personality of Godhead. Both she and Subhadra became absorbed in thoughts of Krishna and attained the same results as their husbands. And the purport I wanted to read, because I was reminded by what Prabhupada told us the day that I was initiated. When flying an airplane in outer space, one cannot take care of other planes in outer space. Everyone has to take care of his own plane, and if there is any danger, no other plane can help another in that condition. Similarly, at the end of life, when one has to go back to home, back to Godhead, everyone has to take care of himself without help rendered to another. The help is, however, offered on ground before flying in space. Similarly, the spiritual master, the father, the mother, the relatives, the husband, etc., can all render help during one's lifetime. But while crossing the sea, Prabhupada changes the analogy here, one has to take care of himself and utilize the instructions formerly received. Draupadi had five husbands, and no one asked Draupadi to come, but Draupadi had to take care of herself without waiting for her great husbands. And because she was already trained up, she at once took to the concentration of the lotus feet of the Lord Vasudeva, Krishna, the personality of Godhead. The wives also got the same result as their husbands in the same manner, that is to say, that without changing the body, they reached the destination of back to Godhead. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur suggests that both Draupadi and Subhadra, although her name is not mentioned herein, got the same result. None of them had to quit the body. So again, Jivan Mukta. Yeah, just this analogy of flying your own airplane, flying solo. I always found this a useful analogy, something we can all remember. And it was, I've probably mentioned here before, but at the initiation lecture, well, it was the Bhagavatam lecture on the morning of our initiation in Paris, that Prabhupada, speaking on another verse from this canto, gave this analogy. And I thought it was very germane, very significant, and somehow I've always remembered that. We have to fly our own airplane. But, and it's also interesting, in the purport, Prabhupada lists not just the guru, but the father, the mother, the relatives, the husband, etc., can all render help during one's lifetime. So everyone is helping us prepare for flying solo. We have to fly our plane solo. Right, there's one more verse. The subject of the departure of the sons, okay, this is the Palashruti verse. Subject of the departure of the sons of Pandu for the ultimate goal of life back to Godhead is fully auspicious and is perfectly pure. Therefore, anyone who hears this narration with devotional faith certainly gains devotional service of the Lord, the highest perfection of life. So, what do we get if we hear this narration? Highest perfection? Devotional service. So, very good. Good thing to get. Right? Just one more point, putting on my comparative religion cap. I've just been reading. There's an interesting notion that developed in the late 18th century in Europe, the idea of the noble savage. An anthropologist, you know the word savage? Savage means like wild person, uncivilized person, but noble savage. The very famous French author Jean-Jacques Rousseau was celebrating the notion of the noble savage, the idea that in a state of nature, actually, people were noble, but we became degraded by becoming implicated by all of the complexities of civilization. And according to Rousseau, he tells a little sort of tale of how this all happened. He says, one day, someone enclosed some land and claimed, this is mine. And by deception, by saying things which deceived the others with whom he was living, he convinced them that this was okay. And it's all been downhill from there, according to Rousseau. So the idea of the noble savage has haunted and fascinated anthropologists ever since. They've been sort of searching for that noble savage. Where is he? They go to, you know, primitive cultures and they study and they're kind of hoping. And there have, of course, been cases of, you know, bringing someone from the wild to civilization and seeing what happens. They put them in a museum and look at him. That sort of thing has gone on. So, noble savage, this reminded me that Yudhishthira Maharaj, what does he do? He takes off all his clothes, he puts on rags, he lets his hair grow long, he becomes the noble savage. Because he's actually noble, he's Yudhishthira. And he has demonstrated his nobility in all respects throughout his life. But it's at the end of his life that this sort of feature comes forth. He gives up all the trappings of civilization and becomes, in some sense, you know, natural, part of nature. So there's an interesting, also in the Bhagavatam, exploration of what is the relation of human beings and nature. In this case, it's a yogic devolution to prepare for death. But Prabhupada then highlights, actually it was not death. It was not a change of body. Back home, back to Godhead in this body. Grantaraj Shiman Bhagavatam ki jai. Any further thoughts? Yes, Tattva. Charles Lindbergh's solo flight.
He's also went to France.
Yeah.
So when he says, you're flying your own airplane, and he says, I'm crossing the sea, you're on your
own. Ah, that's the connection.
Charles Lindbergh.
Yeah, that's good.
He was completely on his own in that airplane, and he prepared for weeks ahead of time. He practiced staying up all night,
oh,
giving himself sleep more and more so he could stay awake at that airplane.
Yeah. That's did you all hear this? Lindbergh, Charles Lindbergh. Yeah, I remember in the film, also there was a fly in the cabin, and the fly kept, you know, landing on him and waking him up. Yeah, that's an interesting point. That would explain the sudden change of metaphor. Thank you.
I always I get confused by Yudhisthira's behavior. If I understand correctly, when he decides to leave, he doesn't talk to Draupadi or his brothers. He just walks out.
That would seem to be the case here, yeah.
Which, first of all, that itself seems quite severe. This is a pure devotee, this is a pure devotee service.
Mm.
It's very harsh. But then he has this incredible sympathy for a dog. As if he is very soft-hearted, very caring.
Yeah.
How do you turn around and just ignore the brother and just like, is there an understanding of how this is normal behavior for some type of
Well, as I mentioned, who is the dog? The dog is Dharma himself, and the what's being highlighted there is his insistence to continue to give shelter to someone, a dog, who is asking for shelter. And I guess here's the guessing time, that the understanding is that the other Pandavas and Draupadi, and I think this would be supported by Prabhupada's comments here, they no longer needed his shelter. They were prepared to go back to Godhead. So they had, and he knew that, and therefore there was, in effect, nothing more to be said. Again, though, this is, you know, it's really very different in the Mahabharata. In the Mahabharata, as each one drops, then, I believe it's Yudhisthira in the beginning, asking, who is he asking? Forgetting now. He asks, why is it that Draupadi has died in this condition? And the answer is given because, and then with each one there's some small fault they have. It's generally some pride. Well, in the case of Bhima, his fault was that he ate a lot without being concerned if others were hungry. So all these kind of dharmic sort of moral things, they were all you know, extremely dharmic, but they each had one fault, and therefore they all fell. And Yudhishthir, he says, I don't want to go to heaven. I want to go where my brothers are, where my family is. So all of that is very, a very different understanding, a very, well, dharma artha kama moksha sort of understanding. As we know, the Mahabharata is focused, whereas the Bhagavatam is rejecting all of that. It seems this is a reason why also the dog episode is not mentioned here. All of this was sort of secondary to Vyasa, we understand, is compiling, writing this, who wants to make one single clear point. They're all meditating on the Lord, and therefore they're all returning to the Lord. So when you ask, you know, how is this, Yudhishthir acted like this or that, as described in the Mahabharata? Well, the Mahabharata is full of difficult things to explain. It's a whole compendium of difficulties about the nature of dharma and what is dharma. And yeah. Yes.
How is it that they drop that and then they go back to the same way?
How is it that they went?
They drop that.
They drop dead and then they went back.
They go back.
How did they drop dead, but then they went back to the same body? Again, I think Vyasa is saying what was there in the Mahabharata, that's not really what happened. It maybe looked like that's what happened, but that's not what really happened. What really happened is this. That seems to be the mood. So, appearances. The whole Mahabharata, at the end, there's this sort of grand revelation that actually the whole thing was just Maya. The whole war and everything that happened, it was all just one big illusion. Yes, Bhagavati Manaji.
In regards to the question of Shivananda,
yeah.
And then what Prabhupada is explaining about when everybody has to fly his own airplane. I was thinking, isn't there anything there somewhere that so like you just do a show, ultimately we do have to live by ourselves.
Yeah.
The family can also just hold us back.
Yeah.
To extend the
yeah.
family attachments, so we do have to fly our airplanes.
Indeed. Yudhishthir decided to fly his own airplane. but I think the question was, couldn't he have at least said goodbye or something? Yes, man.
When Vipula told Dhritarashtra to leave, he also told him to leave without telling him.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. When Vidura told Dhritarashtra to leave, he told them, don't tell the others, just go. Because if you tell them, then they will try to hold you back. So, yeah, interesting. Yes. Mandali.
Can you maybe compare the flying your own plane when you're dying to instances when, for example, Shokapa comes to pick up somebody, whether at that moment of death or some other great person comes in
and flies your plane for you? Together. Can we compare? Possibly, yes. I mean, we have this painting on the wall behind you that is derived from this description suggested in the Bhagavad Gita that the Lord comes and picks up his devotee. So I guess you could say, using the flying analogy, you have to fly your own plane from this realm and at some point, Krishna will come and pick you up. Krishna will take you.
Yeah.
If you feel like the plane is not going to make it across the sea, Krishna, Krishna, then Krishna will go on Garuda. Pick you up out of the ocean. So nice. Yeah. So, meanwhile, we are so fortunate. We are all together helping each other to prepare for that. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Hare Krishna.